When you walk into a room or a party or a general setting, sometimes you pick up vibes from people. Sometimes they're great energy vibes, sometimes not so much. And my next guest is definitely one of those people that just radiates energy and love and peacefulness with a beautiful laugh and a smile on top of that. And her name is Shirley Gordon, so I want to thank you for being my guest, Shirley.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
You're listening to, should have listened to my mother, and clearly the topic is our moms, and some people are very willing to talk about their moms, and some people not so much. But I wanted Shirley to share with us her experiences. She grew up in Peekskill, New York, lived in Warwick, lived in New Jersey, and she's seen and done quite a bit. And I would like to hear, in Shirley's words, who she thinks she is today. Is it because of your mom or in spite of your mom?
I think there's a bit of both. Certainly because of her in my later years and in my early growing up, probably in spite of her.
What is her name?
Fanny Shrakis.
That's a first. I haven't had another Fanny on the show.
And when she would introduce herself, she did not like the name Fanny. She would say, "My name is Fanny Shrakis. Everybody has one." All right?
Oh, there we go. That's a heck of an open to a show. And why, you say, when you were younger, you didn't have such a great relationship?
My dad was the affectionate part of their marriage. My mother was a hard working, very bright woman. She was, I don't know how to explain that feeling about of in spite of, because she instilled in me some great qualities and abilities. I know that. But when in thinking of her, I thought, Fanny Shrakis, you were not a very warm mother. It was an interesting revelation to me.
Did her childhood have an effect on her adulthood?
Yes. She was brought up, they were poor. She came to the United States from Poland when she was 6 months old, and she had an older sister who was born in Poland, and my grandfather, as is in most cases, brought them here. And but I know that she was always afraid of being poor. When they came into Port Chester on the ocean, and my grandfather came to Peekskill because the doctor told him that his children had to be away from the water. He had a twin sons, one of whom was asthmatic, so he went to the train station window and said, showed the money and said, "How far will this get me?" And it got him to Peekskill, New York. And they actually lived on the dock for a while. But my grandfather. So that was overriding for my mother about being poor.
From the depression, the food lines, everything, that's a hard thing to get over, right?
Absolutely. And my mom and dad had a 7-day-a-week grocery store. So food, I was born in 1927. So that was not a worry about food. But my dad was very enterprising. And if he wanted to buy real estate or something like that, she always put the kibosh on that because she was afraid. Yeah. My mother and father instilled in their children how to work. We all helped in the grocery store. And to always, you know, greet people and be respectful of people. And I think, you know, I realize that your introduction is something that many people say about me, but it's just that that's the way I was brought up. To know that when someone walked into the store, you said, hello, can I help you? You know, that kind of thing.
You learned that at a young age, right? In the store, you had to. Well, that's a great gift that your parents gave you.
Absolutely. I know that. And the other thing was that on Saturday morning, when I would want to curl up with a book or listen to the radio, that was something my mother always, always encouraged and would let me do, because she herself wanted to be a teacher, but she could not do that. So that was a gift that I realized that she gave me.
Was she homeschooled, do you know, or did they go to school in Peekskill?
Oh, she was the first one in her family to graduate high school.
Oh, my goodness. All these firsts.
Yes. That was 1923. She wanted to be a teacher. Her maiden name was Hurwitz, which is very a very Jewish name. And when she decided in high school to declare that she wanted to be a teacher, she was called down to the office, the principal of the high school, who ended up being my principal, too, for when I was in high school. And he said to her, Miss Hurwitz, you have to change what you want to be, because no one is going to hire a Jewish woman to be a teacher. So she then changed to be a secretary.
She didn't do what she aspired to do because they
told her. No, she didn't. She was 16, 17. You know, in your junior year when you say she felt she would go to college, she'd find a way. But Dr. Quitmire said, don't even think about it, Ms. Hurwitz. So she,
wow.
Yeah, I know.
All the way back then.
I know. And then when I applied to the University of Rochester, I happened to be salutatorian of my class, and the valedictorian and I both applied to the University of Rochester, and she was accepted and I was not. And so we had a dean of women in that high school, and she called me to the office. She said, we're going to call the University of Rochester. And she did, with me in the office, and they said, Miss Baker, you don't understand, the Jewish quota is filled. So I was like history repeating itself. And I didn't know my mother's story till I came home and told her my story.
So what did you do? This is amazing that we're talking about this.
What I did was she then said that, you know what, Shirley, she said, I had a friend who went to a small college upstate New York, Hobart and William Smith. And, I mean, one of my requisites was that I didn't want a school with a sorority. And she said, let's see if you can get into William Smith. That was a class of 100 women. And it was an Episcopal school. and so I was accepted at William Smith.
And you never thought to fight it?
Oh, no. No, I just was, I was stunned. I mean, I never carried that. I never had that on my shoulders. Yes, I was Jewish, but there weren't that, you know, wasn't a big Jewish population in Peekskill. But my mom and dad had a corner grocery store, and there weren't Jewish neighborhoods or anything like that. Yeah, no. That, in those days, you didn't fight quotas. That's the way it was. So anyhow, when I came home and said that I was going to go to, you know, that I was accepted in William Smith, and the tuition was more, I had a scholarship, but the tuition was more than the University of Rochester, my mother said, And is Miss Baker going to pay tuition? And my father said, wherever she's going, however much it costs, that's how we will support her. But I'll never forget my mother saying that. Is Miss Baker going to pay the tuition?
Sure she is. And what did you do after college?
Well, I graduated high school in 45, and so then I went the fall of 45 to William Smith, and when I came back as a sophomore, the war was over, and so there were GIs all over the place, and that's where I met my husband, because he went to Hogwash.
Yes, we are definitely going to talk to you about your husband, but I want to go back to one other thing first. I didn't want to bring up the age thing only because I thought it would be fascinating for people to be blown away come the end of the show, because you do not sound like your age. Are you 91?
I'm 90. I will be 91 in December. I know. I get that all
the
time.
Fun. That is so much fun. And I hope that everyone that's listening is blown away as I am. And obviously I get to see you on a more regular basis.
Yeah. Oh,
but
right.
It's just absolutely fascinating. Yes. Yeah, so one of my questions was, the major historical changes that you've seen in your life, let alone World War II, and your parents coming on the boat, having the store, you've seen quite a bit.
My dad came here when he was 6 from Russia, and my mother 6 months from Poland.
Did they speak to you in Polish when you were
growing up? Yiddish. Actually both in English, but my mother spoke a beautiful Yiddish, and I am sorry to this day that she didn't teach us. But she did. She had a very beautiful Yiddish. When she was by herself as a widow, Jewish Family Service in Peekskill arranged for her to have a Yiddish-speaking telephone friend who used to call her once a week, and they would converse in Yiddish, which I thought was just wonderful.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Loved to speak Yiddish. Yep.
Close to her heart, so close to her heart, her part of her life that never had to go away. That's pretty great. So the war comes and goes, and voila, this handsome devil, Seymour, right?
Seymour Gordon, yes.
Did your parents like him?
Yes. My mother was always afraid I was going to be I was married before I was 21, but she was sure I was going to be a spinster. I don't know why, but anyhow, she always worried about me. I did have a boyfriend in high school, and, I actually wasn't thinking of getting married so young, but Seymour had been in the Army, and he was 5 years older than I, and he was ready to, to settle down. So we were married between our junior and senior year in college. I did finish college.
Oh, good for you. I mean, right, what does it matter now?
Well, that was part of the deal.
That was part of the deal. I think that's a smart deal. You got plenty of time to do everything, but...
Right. I was pregnant when I graduated.
Oh, there you go. And so your mom, did you live close? Was your mom involved with raising the children?
Well, she always, the store always came first. And, it was 7 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night and 7 days a week. And so... what happened when Joy was my firstborn, I used to drive to Peekskill to so they could get a chance to see her. But they didn't come very often. She came for a little while, but she worried about my father being by himself all the time, in the store. So
that's a lot of work.
Oh, sure. Oh, but... She did learn to drive. She never learned to drive, but she learned to drive when Joy was born. She was in her 40s, and she got tired of asking people to drive her to Warwick to see her grandchild. So she learned how to drive.
Did your dad teach her?
No. That would have been terrible. someone else taught her. But she never, she hated backing up. And so she'd come, I had a long driveway, she'd walk in the door, and she'd say, back the car out. And I would say, Mom, you can, she said, if you don't want me to stay all the time. So I would back it out and turn it around.
Oh, she sounds wonderful. I know she had to be tough, but...
She was tough. She was tough. My brother fell from an obstacle course at Fort Dix when he was drafted, and she had already learned how to drive. And she drove to Fort Dix every day to see, to make sure that he didn't move in his cast, because he was not supposed to move. He had a cast from his shoulders to his knees. And she went every day to Fort Dix. And I don't know, she turned that car around herself. But I keep thinking, Fort Dix, she did that. I mean,
did they make fun of him? Did they? Did they tease him for that? His mom coming to
never, never. His mother came.
They probably all love their mom so much.
Yeah. Oh, right. I mean, he was the apple of her eye. He was a gorgeous baby, and he was the apple of her eye. But it was always amazing to me that she did that.
So were you, as the oldest, treated differently than your two younger siblings?
I actually, yeah. You know, firstborn, you are the obedient child,
yeah.
Right? There's something about that firstborn.
Yeah, birth order.
That's like that. I mean, of course, my sister was 6 years younger, and she was, my father just idolized her. She was, that was terrific. And I, you know... She's 14, and I'm married already and have left the house. So, it was an interesting childhood, truly. I never felt that I wasn't loved, and I always felt that I was respected. My siblings didn't appreciate the fact that I was the first in school, and I was so obedient, and I was salutatorian. They always got, Shirley wouldn't do that. You know how small towns are. I mean, that's the way teachers used to be. I hope they don't do that anymore, because I felt badly for
them. You set the bar pretty high.
Yes, I
I can understand if they didn't like you very much.
No, I don't blame them.
But they could have done the same. They could have worked hard, right?
Yeah, right. My brother didn't have that. My sister had other things in mind. So, but I loved going. I loved academics and going to school. I really did. For all my life, I've loved that.
Tell us a little bit about your teaching experiences, because I would imagine you have wonderful interactions with children.
Well, I guess I have to tell you that Leah just got a Facebook from one of my students, Bridget O'Connor, who was having difficulty learning how to read. And she wrote in her Facebook about me. I was just amazed. I mean, I actually, her mother and father were socially, you know, I knew them well, and Bridget was, she was a kind of a hard nut to crack, but I did teach her how to read. She has a wonderful position now, and she has a daughter who she once introduced to her to me, you know, said, "This is Mrs. Gordon, my special teacher," you know. I have, because I was in a small town, kids always remember I taught first grade, I taught kindergarten, and those years, that's when kids really remember their teachers. And so I would walk into town, and they'd say, "Oh, hi, Mrs. Gordon." I'd say, "I remember the face, but I don't have the name," you know. And
understandable, right? You saw
many
faces.
Right, a lot of names. And when I did know the names, they thought that was wonderful. But I'll never forget being in school while I was a special reading teacher. I taught 17 years. And it was parents' night, and this young man walks up in front of my door. He said, "Mrs. Gordon, are you still here?" And I said, "Yes, Richard." I recognized him right away. He said, "You know, I have a child in first grade." I said, "I know, Richard."
Very smart, very smart. Let's backtrack a little bit because this is so fascinating. So how many years ago did you, this woman that just, but for my listeners, Leah is Shirley's daughter who I know well and I work with, and she's just remarkable. And I'm so glad that she introduced me to you, her mom. But how many years ago did you teach this woman, this mother who just contacted her?
Bridget, I think, let's see, I'm trying to think. I started teaching in the 60s. So, yeah, it has to be early 70s.
So 50 years ago?
Yeah, she's actually, Bridget is older than Leah, and Leah was just 50.
That's the coolest thing, that you have an impact on these kids, and they're still reaching out to you to thank you. Well, it's a true testament to who you are.
Well, I loved teaching. I really did. And, of course, my mom only thought you could be a nurse or a teacher. I was never going to be a nurse, and I didn't think I was going to be a teacher. I liked psychology also, and I almost went on to be a school psychologist, but I didn't do that. I remained a teacher.
I am so thankful that you did, because I know there are so many women of your era who gave up their dreams because they were told they couldn't or shouldn't.
Yes, absolutely. I know.
And that's really hard. And what they did, they wound up staying home and having a family and raising their children, which is the most important job in the whole wide world.
Right. And actually, I was married 10 years and had two children. But it was a time in New York State teachers were really needed, and they had this wonderful intensive teacher training program. And so that I went to school in the summer, and I taught 2 years and then took my comprehensives, and that's how I got my master's in education. So because I had a liberal arts education, which I think is very important, and then was able, because I had a very supportive husband. He said, "This will be my life insurance policy. I know that you'll be able to do something." And then as a teacher, I was a sub for quite a while, and until Leah was born. And then, I mean, you realize I have 19 years between my oldest and my youngest. And so when she was born, I had been teaching full time, and then I went back to being a sub. And when she went to kindergarten, I started being a reading specialist.
Wow! Did your mom approve of you working?
She thought that was the cat's meow that I had gone back to school. Yes, she was very proud of the fact.
Was she ever resentful?
My mother? Oh no, never, never. And I have, in thinking about my mother, I have to say that we became very good friends when she was when she was widowed. And I'm trying to think, she was a widow, I would say, for about 15 years. And I used to make it my business to come across the Hudson River and visit her. We were very good friends, but the thing of it is that she never talked about her health. She was up on everything. She was a voracious reader. And so we had wonderful phone conversations. I always spoke to her. I would call her before I lit the candles on Friday night, and we'd have a great conversation. And she'd always, sometimes I couldn't come over, and I would apologize. She said, "You're as close as the telephone," which was wonderful.
Wow, she sounds pretty remarkable.
Yes, she was. I know that she was remarkable. Yes, I want to tell you a funny story about my mother. My mom learned how to play bridge when one of her customers came in and said, "Fanny, we need a fourth at bridge." My mom said, "I don't know how to play bridge." She said, "We'll teach you." So she learned how to play bridge, and she loved it. It is a terrific game. And when she would have her bridge club, and so she taught my brother Alvin, my sister Ray, and me. My sister was 4. I was going on 11, Alvin was 9, and we learned how to play bridge, okay? So when my mom would have her bridge club and maybe somebody was absent, she would say, "Shirley, come and play bridge." Well, there are two types of bridge. It was called auction and contract, and my mother learned how to play auction. And when I went to college, I learned how to play contract, which is a much more demanding kind of bridge. And so I'd come home, she'd say, "You have to sub." I'd say, "Oh, Mom, auction, I don't want." "Oh, you have to. Don't be a snob." Her bridge club went and learned how to play contract, and she apologized to me when I came home from school on a vacation. She said, "I understand now why you didn't want to play auction." She said, "This is a terrific game."
I don't know how to play bridge. My mom used to play bridge, and everybody loves it. It's a real brain stimulator, isn't it? It's very good.
Yes, I love to play bridge, right.
You also were an avid tennis player.
Yes. I played until I moved here, until I was 88 when I stopped playing tennis, because we had a wonderful foursome. The youngest was in her 50s, but it was a terrific, a very forgiving surface at a spa. And I learned how to play tennis when I was in my 40s. And one of my friends said, "I think you're a natural. Come on, we need somebody." It was a teacher's tennis group. And I did, and I loved it. I still enjoy vicariously when the Open comes or the French Open, whatever. I do enjoy it.
And you're also involved quite a bit in your temple, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, you don't have a minute to sit down, young lady.
I know. I sort of make people around here tired. But it's just the way I am. I attribute some of it to vitamin D. I'm a big vitamin D.
Oh, that's so great. You also were, when you were in Warwick, you were a docent at the Shingle House, the historical trail walk.
Oh, yes. Yes, I was.
So you've always, and your daughter as well, Leah, very community-oriented and very giving of your time.
Yes, I was actually head of something called Encore at the Middletown Community College, which is like lifelong learning, like adult school, but it was at the college.
And you seem to fit all of these, it's like a puzzle. You put all these different pieces in there, and you guys, you keep going. Your day just keeps getting more full and full in different activities and appointments.
Well,
and
if I tell you that I had been going every morning to the early morning service at the temple, I announced it so that they didn't think something had that I'd fallen down the steps or something, that I'm coming every other day, because I'm just not getting up that early anymore, I decide. So I'm feeling, it was just sort of sleep-deprived, and I said, "This is really stupid." So,
I think it's okay that you made that decision.
Yeah, everybody says it's all right.
So I definitely want to touch on Seymour for a little bit, your loving husband, who
yes.
passed away a couple of years ago, because he did some remarkable work. I remember the first time I went up to Warwick with Leah.
Oh, yeah.
He saved so much land.
Thousands of acres of farmland. it's called Purchase of Development Rights, which happens here. New Jersey was actually one of the first states that did that. Purchase of Development Rights is for farmers who, instead of selling their land to developers, are encouraged to keep their farms. And what it is that if your farm is put into that PDR, you get a payment that is the difference per acre in what a developer would pay you and what farmland is worth. So my husband, Seymour, was instrumental in persuading the town of Warwick to pass a bond, which means people had to tax themselves. I think the bond was something like $9 million for the farmers to, for Warwick to be part of Purchase of Development Rights. He was one of the pioneers in New York State. I mean, people all over New York State know his name because of it. And he has a plaque in the town hall in his honor.
I hope he gets a plaque. I hope he got a plaque.
Oh, he does. I have a copy of it myself.
So he said in Warwick, New York, it's Orange County, it's the home of the black dirt, right? Black dirt is Warwick.
Yes. But black dirt is not ever in Purchase of Development Rights. It's a different kind of farming and a different kind of soil. It's protected in a different way. But he saved dairy farms, horse farms, wineries, that kind of farming.
Oh, my gosh. And it's so beautiful up there. It's, in case someone's not familiar with it, it's definitely worth a trip.
Right. And every farm that is in PDR has a plaque, has a shingle that announces that they are a Purchase of Development Right farm. And it's in perpetuity. I mean, even if you bought it and didn't farm it, you cannot do anything with the land. It would have to slide fallow, but you could hire somebody to farm it. But it can never be have anything but farming. So, and Christy Whitman actually came for one of the first farms that was PDR. It's called Borderland Farms. It is a horse farm, and it was on the border. It's Sussex County and Orange County touch each other.
New Jersey and New York and, borders.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so she came and spoke at that farm. It was one of the first PDR farms, and Seymour was invited.
Didn't he have a...
a John Deere dealer, right? And he was, yes, and he was president of New York State Farm Equipment Dealers.
Got out of the war, went to school on the GI Bill, right? Married, fell in love, and married you, and had a beautiful family.
Yes, he did. And in fact, I did have a son, David, and it was interesting because my oldest daughter, I went to Israel and lived on a kibbutz, and it was the, the Yom Kippur War. David went over to the kibbutz to help with their orange grove because he knew about tractors and had a farm.
Because he learned it from his dad, right?
Certainly did. He certainly did. And they all learned how to fish.
Oh, I heard he was an avid fisherman.
He was. Leah can put, my youngest daughter is able to put a worm on a hook, which I can't do.
So if you could say anything to your mom right here and now, what would it be?
Well, I would, and of course my mom also lived to be in her mid-90s. A couple of things. I know that she was very careful with what we ate. We had a store, of course, but we never got candy, and we could have ice cream once a week, and we never had soda. She was very careful with our diet. I have to thank her for that. And I know, I mean, she was always interested in everything. And I really thank her for, in her old age, teaching me how never to talk about how you feel or your health, but rather what's happening in the world, and to be aware of what's happening.
And did you guys cook all this amazing food? Were you involved in meal prep with her, or she handled all
that? No, my mother was a terrible cook.
What kind of terrible?
We always had, you know, we had proper food. It was a protein, a starch, and a vegetable, and a fruit for dessert. It could be a fruit cocktail, but from the can. But no, my mom was not a cook. And when I got married, in my yearbook, it says that if you can read, you should be able to cook. Because that's how I cook.
You put that in your yearbook with your photograph?
I was the editor of my yearbook.
Of course you were.
That was under my picture. But anyhow, but I have a family of cooks, as you will know.
You certainly do. So it came down from somewhere.
My husband was a great chef. He loved to cook. So, I just don't taste things, but I am a good, you know, I'm a very good baker. And I make a mean apple pie, and I make a lemon meringue pie from scratch. And I can read, and I can do good recipes.
You are wonderful to talk to. I'm so glad I had you on the show, Shirley Gordon. Thank you so much for joining me on Should Have Listened to My Mother.
You're welcome.